sports law has three main topics. One is regulatory disciplinary law. The second aspect of sport law is more a commercial aspect. And the final one is labor law.
Right now, what is the biggest sort of dilemma that sport is facing in terms of sports law?
I think the biggest dilemma is how you make accountable the international federations, the national governing bodies, when they take decisions that people think they are not correct. One big controversy is TV rights, because at the end is the main source of income of all the clubs in Colombia. And Colombia has a very particular income right distribution, and it's only based on if you are a football club type A or a football club type B.
David is from Colombia. That's why today I decided to rep the Colombian jersey as well.
The best t-shirt in South America. There's no doubt about it. Don't think it's Argentina, Brazil. No, it's Colombia.
Hey everyone, welcome back to a very special episode of All About Sports, the podcast, a weekly sports podcast for the fans, by the fans. I'm your host, Mazhar, and I'm joined by another dear friend of mine, a fellow Loughborough University London student, David Iguaran.
Hi, Maz. It's a pleasure to be here. Hi to all the people that will listen to the podcast. Hopefully it's entertaining. It's a topic that a lot of people think maybe it's kind of boring, but I think we will have some examples, some good stuff that will be very exciting to listen to.
Thanks for that, David. So yeah, as David mentioned, we're going to be covering something very different. And I'm sure there aren't too many podcasts out there talking about this, especially not in English. Maybe there will be a lot in Spanish, but definitely not in English. And what we will be discussing with David is sports law and also the Colombian structure of football, because if you didn't know, David is from Colombia. That's why today I decided to rep the Colombian jersey as well.
The best t-shirt in South America. There's no doubt about it. Don't think it's Argentina, Brazil. No, it's Colombia.
Yeah, man. This blue Colombian jersey a few years back was definitely the best international jersey I've seen in a long, long time. I think the Germans also do an incredible job. But yeah, in South America, I agree. It's got to be the Colombian jersey. But a bit of background and a bit of an introduction to David. Like I said, David is a master's student from Loughborough University, London. He's done his master's in sport business and innovation. At the same time, he has done law and specifically sports law as well, excelled in that, and ended up working for D Major, which is it's basically the equivalent of the Premier League in Colombia. So D Major runs the first two leagues in the football pyramid structure of Colombian football. So I'm going to start off, David, with sports law first, because we've done a podcast with an Indian who has done law, but he did pure law and transitioned into becoming a TV anchor. And now he does tech podcasts and he's doing pretty well. Ayush Ailawadhi. We'll put the link for his episode in the description as well. But now this is a first take. This is a pure sports law talk here, and we've never had this before. So David, first take us through, what are the typical cases that one would deal with in sports law?
Okay, Mas. So sports law, the first thing is to try to give a definition about sports law. And the way I see it is that sports law, because comes from private organizations, at the end, sports is run by basically and primarily because of private companies, national governing bodies, they are private companies. It's a mixture of different law topics. So sports law has, like, I think, three main topics. One is regulatory disciplinary law. And what I want to say with this is all the internal regulation that the companies, the national governing bodies, the leagues, the International Olympic Committee creates to have a certain rules and operate in a certain way. So, for example, the Premier League handbook, That's law. That's regulatory law for the Premier League, and all the clubs in the Premier League, they need to follow those regulations. And the disciplinary aspect of it is that if you don't follow these rules, there is a punishment, a disciplinary punishment. And therefore, if you need to follow these rules, because if you don't follow it, a punishment will happen. The second aspect of sport law is more a commercial aspect. And this, what I want to say is all the economic aspect that comes with law. So, for example, a transfer of a player from a certain club to another club that is in a different league. That transfer needs to have a transfer agreement, and they need to settle with an economic fee transfer and all kind of stuff. So usually those are private agreements, and sport law has specific aspects that enter in these kind of agreements. Also in the commercial aspect, there's intellectual property, what is copyright, and image rights. So for example, Cristiano Ronaldo, he has a value because of his image, or the Premier League has a value because of its media rights. So that's also another aspect of sport law. And the final one is labor law. So it's all the elements that come from being a professional athlete. So if you are a professional, here it comes to labor law. So you need to have a labor agreement, a contract with a club or with a governing body that binds to you to follow certain rules, get certain objectives, and in the other side, you receive a fee, a wage because of your performance. So basically, yeah, what I think is the sports law is a mixture of different types of law. And basically, these are the main three topics.
Coming to what you said, now, sports law as a concept is obviously, like you said, it has its basis based on normal law, and you would think about commercial law typically. So what is the typical role of a sports lawyer? Do they, obviously they'll represent athletes, but then you have agents who also need to understand law. How does that agent versus lawyer structure sort of work?
Yeah, so there are different types of sport lawyers, and they specialize depending on the type of sport law they do. So for example, if they're in the regulatory, the disciplinary measures, they will go to the CAS and try to gain advantage or object a decision. But in the terms of agents and commercial law, the lawyer is the one that tries to, if there is an agreement, if there is a transfer of a player, that is done correctly, because at the end, the agent, what is looking is for the economic advantage, the player's welfare. But at the end, the lawyer, what is looking for is that the agreement that the three parties or two parties settle is good, and it's beneficial for the player or the club or whatever party is interested. And at the end, that it follows certain rules and the applicable law in the specific scenario. So the main difference is that the agent only looks for the economic benefit. The sport lawyer looks for that the things are done right, that it's bound by the law, and that's it.
Now, lawyers typically will have to work with athletes, teams, obviously the regulatory bodies, countries as well. We're seeing it with Qatar and with the structure that FIFA has in place. What are the advantages and disadvantages of sports law specifically?
Yeah, so the advantages is that it's private law at the end, like what I said in the first answer. Like FIFA one day says, okay, I want to change my bylaws, I want to change my regulations, and who can tell FIFA not to do it? No country, no state, no international organization, like, I don't know, the United Nations could tell FIFA, don't do that. Because at the end, it's a private organization that it's based in Switzerland, and they say, I want to run the football like this way, or FIBA says, I want to run basketball this way. So the advantage is that you have a lot of like free space to do whatever you want in terms of your regulations. But at the other side, there is a territorial and aspect that they need to follow. So for example, FIFA can say, I want that the player's contract can be for 10 years. Like a club can sign a contract with a player for 10 years if they want. Currently, it's maximum 5 years. But for example, they go to Colombia and they say, you can sign a contract with a player for 10 years. The problem is that at the end, this private law needs to be bound by the national law. So for example, in Colombia, a term fixed contract only maximum 3 years. Okay, you have private law, you have private regulations, but if these private regulations go like against the national law of a certain country, you cannot skip it or avoid it. So at the end, yeah, you have a lot of freedom, but the national law of certain countries is above the private law. So that's an advantage and a disadvantage. And the other disadvantage, I think, is there is no consensus. There's no agreement in certain aspects. And is that at the end, it's few people that take these decisions of what should be the law and what should be the right thing. And maybe not the relevant stakeholders are taken in consideration when they take these decisions of what is considered law. So for example, a lot of problems in terms of what is doping and what is considered doping. There's a lot of like debate of what if the athlete thinks they are treated well or they are having a just process when they are in a doping cases, because the presumption of innocence is against the athlete. So yeah, it's like they don't consider like relevant stakeholders and parties when they the national bodies or the people that make the law is producing law.
I mean, that's crazy. Like you said, it comes down to who's calling the shots, and there's so many question marks raised on who's been put into power as well, right? Which actually brings me to the next question. You said that, like you said, the UN can't, for example, take matters into their hands if FIFA is doing something atrocious or wrong. You have CAS who makes those arbitration decisions. For all those who don't know, CAS is the court for arbitration of sport. So they're like the Supreme Court in a lot of ways for sport. So when can CAS come in and deal with corrupt matters in FIFA, or what's the structure to that? If you can just shed some light on that as well.
Okay, so CAS at the end is private arbitration. So what does this mean is that the parties that they have a conflict, they need to agree to go to that jurisdiction, to that arbitration. It's not like a national court that you don't need to agree to your counterpart to go to court or go to the justice. If they owe you a money, I don't know, if you're in England and somebody owe you money, you can go to the court and tell you, hey, he owes me money. In the difference with CAS is, again, the private aspect of sport law. Both of the parties need to accept to go to arbitration and go to CAS. So usually why everything turns out to be in CAS is because these private organizations, these international federations, national federations, governing bodies, in their statutes, in their bylaws, they say, if you want to be part of the sports system, if you want to be an athlete, if you want to be a club in a certain league, you need to accept, and you are bound to, that if there is any conflict, we are going to CAS. And why they go to CAS? Because they think that in CAS, they are the experts and they know about sport law. So for the national governing bodies, international federations, at the end, they think it's safer for us that a judge that knows of sport law will take a decision instead of going to, for example, the National Court of Justice of England, the National Court of Justice of Spain, because they are not specialized in sport law. So yeah, basically because it's arbitration, they need to both of the parties that are in a dispute, they need to agree to go to CAS. But that's why you don't see like arbitration in CAS, for example, a country against an international federation, because the country will never accept going to CAS. So usually it's all the parties that are already in the sports system that go there.
See, that's very interesting. And that's something that very few people will know about how the structure works. So thanks for that, David. Also, CAS's cases are all available on their platform. You can have a look at that and read through the case laws as well. The proceedings of all their meetings, so on and so forth, are all there. So, and it's pretty interesting to see. So if you're looking to learn about it, it's a great place to start. Let's move on now. There are lots of dilemmas in sport, especially nowadays, that we're seeing in terms of corruption and just everything that's going wrong. So right now, what is the biggest sort of dilemma that sport is facing today in terms of sports law?
I think the biggest dilemma is who makes accountable, or how you make accountable the international federations, the national governing bodies, when they take decisions that people think they are not correct. So, for example, a great example is Qatar. FIFA, again, it's a private organization. They decided we are going there to make the World Cup there. And a lot of third parties say, how are you going to Qatar? There's human rights violations and all that kind of stuff. So again, is who make accountable these private organizations is the main question, because nobody can force FIFA to turn around and say, no, okay, we're not going to Qatar, we are going to another place. So is how you pressure these organizations, these international federations, to take decisions that maybe, I don't want to like make a judgment if the decision of going to Qatar or other countries correct or not, but who make accountable these international federations of taking a certain decision that maybe goes against another law, that in this case is human rights law and international law. That's another big problem. And another dilemma is, for example, again, is this private type of law that is sport law with trans people. There is a lot of dilemma with that, because again, there's a lot of human rights law that enters in conflict, equality law and all this kind of stuff, that it's difficult. But at the end, if an international federation like the swimming federation took the decision like 1 month ago of prohibiting trans people to compete, at the end, how you make accountable for these decisions? You cannot like challenge them. The only one that can challenge is an athlete, because it's already in the system.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it a pretty difficult situation altogether. And it just tells you that there's so much wrong in one of the biggest industries in terms of viewership as well. Okay, so that's our bit on sports law with David. We're going to move on to the more fun sort of segment of it, something that a lot of people don't know a lot about as well. The Colombian football structure specifically, David. So, of course, firstly, tell us about how it's structured, and then tell us a bit about your experience of working with Di Major as well, because I'm sure everyone will want to know how different is the Colombian Premier League, in a way to say, as compared to the other big leagues in Europe.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's the structure, like, it starts from FIFA, right? So FIFA's international federation. It has the national federations that are members of FIFA, and one of these federations is the Colombian Football Federation. Colombian Football Federation right now is the one that organizes like all the national teams, so the men's team, the women's team, the under-20s, all that kind of stuff. But the Colombian Football Federation decided to delegate the professional football system to a company called Di Major. And here comes Di Major, and Di Major organizes the first and the second division of professional football in Colombia. It's only the first and the second because there is no more professional divisions in Colombia. The third and fourth, it's semi-professional. And in the other side, it's called the football. That it's the company that organizes all amateur football. So all amateur goes to the football, and I was in the major, that was professional football. The major has 36 members, and these members are football clubs. So the most important football clubs in Colombia, I will say first, is Deportivo Cali. If somebody of Colombia disagrees, it's not my problem. But it's because I'm a fan of Deportivo Cali. If you know, if somebody wants to see the best team in Colombia, search for Deportivo Cali. But there's also Atlético
I'm
gonna Nacional.
Remove my Nacional jersey right now.
No, but Nacional is also very good in America, Millonarios. Okay, and it's 36 clubs. And these clubs, they take the most important decisions. So how the competition is organized, how many tournaments per year, how many players you can register to the competition, how many foreign players you can register. And the other aspect that is very important is how money is distributed. But that's another element that is very controversial in Colombia. I don't know if you want to talk about that, but also it's very, very relevant. And in the major, obviously, there is an administrative department that follow like the members' decisions, the club's decisions. And I was in the legal department. That's like the main structure. About my duties, again, what I told you in my first answer, like the sport law has commercial staff, regulatory, labor law. I was focused in the regulatory disciplinary aspect. So my main job was to help the secretariat of the disciplinary committee and the competitions committee to draft resolutions, disciplinary resolutions. And what are these disciplinary resolutions? The basic stuff is to put the yellow and red cards that happens in a match. So for example, if there is a red card, for example, in Deportivo Cali against Atlético Nacional, to get enforced that decision that the referee made and tell how many matches he will not play, the player will not play. So this is not like something arbitrary that the disciplinary committee made. They need to follow a disciplinary code. So for example, FIFA and its competitions has its own disciplinary code. In the major, there is a disciplinary code that it says, if you got rejected because of a red card and it was a violent conduct, is minimum 2 matches. Red cards and the yellow cards is like the simple stuff, but also there was a lot of fines because they don't follow regulations. So for example, when the fans don't behave well in the stadium, there is a certain responsibility from the club to help comply the fans to behave well in a match. If they don't do that, then they receive a fine. And the worst case scenarios is when, for example, there is a match is forfeited. So it's when you played a match, but because you broke a rule, you turn out to lose the game 3-0. That's called forfeiting. That obviously that's the worst cases because you are losing a match in a desk. That's how we call it. You are losing a match in a court. So that's the worst case scenario. So that was my main job. Obviously, there was a lot of controversial cases at that certain time, but it was very fun. It was very fun.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely amazing. And something that I'm sure no one else would have gotten an inside scoop into. And also, like you said, I mean, South America in general is traditionally known to be a place which is difficult to manage. So for teams to control their own fans as well is an extremely difficult challenge. So doing that on a day-to-day basis, I can only imagine the controversy around that. So that covers your role at the major. It's also given a sort of flavor to all those listening to understand how it's structured. I like one point that you brought up, though, and I think we can get into it around D-Major is what you mentioned around just the controversies around it. So if you want, you can just give a brief update on that and then we can move ahead.
Okay, so controversies, I'll try to be very diplomatic in this aspect, but again, is the clubs are the members, they decide what they want to do. And one big controversy is TV rights, because at the end is the main source of income of all the clubs in Colombia. And Colombia has a very particular income right distribution, and it's only based on if you are considered a football club type A or a football club type B. And what this means, if you are a football club type A, you receive certain amount of money. If you're a football club type B, you receive certain amount of money. But the thing is that it doesn't matter if you are in the first division or the second division. The only thing that's important is your status. So there are some football clubs that are type A that currently they are in the second division and they are receiving the same amount of money that a club that is in the first division in the first places, or it becomes champion in a tournament. So I think Colombia football right now is in a crisis is because maybe the distribution is not done correctly. Obviously, there are arguments in favor of how this is distributed, and it's because of something. It's about history, that some historical teams that right now they are not going through a good moment, they are in the second division, but because of their history, they deserve to receive that kind of money. So yeah, that's very controversial. It's always a thing that it's talked about in the general meetings, in their assemblies. And I think it would be interesting to think about it and try to find a different solution, because at the end, if you see the majority of the leagues internationally, they are top teams. Like those are the top teams, and that should be how it should work, because at the end it represents better your country, the country in international competitions. Here it's so competitive because of the money distribution that there is no clear path of who's leading the way or who should follow and try to copy their moves. So that's a very big problem in Colombian football. And obviously the teams that are type A and are in second division or are not performing well right now, they will fight their life to not change this kind of stuff, because if they change it based on a ranking or position or viewership, it will completely change the dynamics in the system.
Yeah, it sounds like a bit like a mixture of the Super League and that fell through and stuff like that. So thanks again, David. That's very insightful and like something that I can swear that no one watching this really knew about. So this is really handy. Now coming to some of the biggest crux of the matters. Of course, you are an ardent football fan. You follow the South American leagues in general. You follow Copa Libertadores and however you pronounce it. Sorry about that.
That's good.
But so you follow all of the leagues that run in South America. So you do know a lot about how CONMEBOL is structured and so on and so forth as well. The biggest controversy was around Copa America that we saw in 2021. Of course, COVID had an impact. And then we all know what happened with that, because it went from Argentina to Brazil. And there was all those complications around that. Again, we're talking about the two biggest South American nations in terms of football. So how do they handle such challenges of balancing economic problems and then hosting these major events as well?
That's very, very interesting what was happening in South America in terms of political aspects, national political aspects and CONMEBOL. So yeah, the 2021 Copa America, first it was going to be in Colombia and Argentina. But what happened is that in 2021, there was a lot of national turmoil in Colombia because of the current government. And there was such a pressure in the public that saying how we are going to host a Copa America if we are dying, we're suffering, there's a lot of inequality in Colombia. How we're going to make a Copa America that only will benefit certain sectors, that it will be the football sector, and the government will try to give money to improve the stadiums, the grounds, but there are more important stuff happening in Colombia. So there was such a pressure that CONMEBOL was trying to do it in Colombia, but was such a big pressure that at the end, CONMEBOL said, okay, we need to move it to Brazil. We know in Brazil, we have all the infrastructure from the 2014 World Cup, so it will be easy. So that's the challenges that, for example, CONMEBOL is facing. Currently, the 2022 Women's Copa America started this weekend in Colombia. And there was a lot of controversy because in the first match, the inaugural match, it was Colombia-Paraguay. It happened yesterday. Colombia won 4-2. And in the protocolary aspects, when there was the anthem of Colombia, the women's players, they hold up their hands up in a form of protest. But what was the protest? The protest was that 1 week ago, Di Mayor decided not to make the women's league for the second semester because they thought the club said there was no money, we cannot do it. But this was, again, the controversy. Why you are hosting a Copa America, Women's Copa America, but at the same time, you are showing the world that you are not doing the women's league. So again, this stuff, although it's very private, this private sport law is very private, and CONMEBOL and all the national federations wants to keep it private. The public aspect, the third parties, the people, they make a lot of pressure and they try to make them accountable. At the end, if they want to continue with their decisions, they can do it, but it's very risky in terms of political aspects.
What's crazy about what you just said was, David, we all know that example for all those who don't and haven't seen that. It was in the South American League where the clubs had jerseys with half of the logo being the women's team and half of it being the male team. So they were promoting women's football and equality in football. And now just to turn to the other side and not sponsor a second season just sounds absolutely ridiculous and absurd as to what's going on. So thanks for that, David. Now, one last question before we have a light section. So we've spoken about sports law. What are the types of degrees that people would require to get a job in sports law? Obviously, apart from doing law in general, what else would you need to do to work in a legal team in a sports organization?
At the beginning, I will tell you it can only be law, but it's because at the end, like the legal departments in all countries, they only like think that the people that is prepared to work in law should study law. I think anybody can work in sport law, but yeah, basically law. But going to the first answer, like you can know general law, but if you don't specialize in a certain specific law, you cannot excel. So if you are very good at commercial law, copyright, image rights, you can be very good and be very professional and have a very successful career. Or you can be focus in disciplinary law and work in disciplinary procedures, go against the CAS and that kind of stuff. But at the end, yeah, at the beginning is law. Maybe that's like a disadvantage about law, that is that at the end, if you're a lawyer, you can only work in law. And if you want to work in law, you need to be a lawyer. It's that closed space that I don't believe in that. I think other people can go to the sport law. It will give more like a broader image of how to think about law. But right now, is if you want to work in sport law, study law.
So there you have it, folks. Some incredible insight from David, not only into obviously South American football and specifically Colombian football, but also on sports law in general. As you can tell, he's been there, done that. That's why I decided to do his master's in sport business, because he decided that he didn't want to take the legal route and wants to try his hand at something else. So it's never too late to switch it around.
That's so true.
but whatever you learn is very insightful. So once again, before we wrap up, this is our favorite section. I always say this. We do this with all our guests. It's the rapid fire round. So I'm just going to ask you 10 rapid questions. Don't think too long and just give me an answer straight up. It's going to be quick. So first one, David, let's go. So Gerrard or Lampard?
Lampard.
Cricket or baseball?
Cricket.
Yeah,
I went 1 month ago with Masario. Different gravy stuff, the cricket. Although Middlesex, they need to improve a lot that team, but it's very fun, the cricket.
Awesome. Favorite food, David?
Ajiaco. Ajiaco is a Colombian soup from my city. Masario, how's the ajiaco? It's good?
Yeah, I love it, but I'm a Mondongo guy. I'm more of a Mondongo guy.
Also very good.
Your favorite pastime, David?
Listen to music.
Yeah, we've been listening to a lot of Above and Beyond recently. David and I have been reminiscing on that.
Above.
Ronaldo or Messi?
Above and Beyond is Messi.
Most overrated player in football history. I'll give you some time.
Overrated. I don't know. Maybe.
I just need a name. I don't need a justification.
I'm thinking. Maybe Dani Alves.
Ooh, okay.
He was very good attacking, but in defense terms, he never convinced me. And a lot of people here in South America, they love Dani Alves.
Okay, so most overrated player, you said Dani Alves. So let's do the other one now. Most underrated player in football?
The most underrated player, it's called Thomas Gravesen.
Man, that's a massive throwback. Massive throwback right there.
Thomas Gravesen was different, man. That was a good player, you know. He was a little bit mad, but that guy went to Real Madrid. If he went to Real Madrid because he was good at the end, he was crazy. That's the players you need in your team.
Shot from the past there by David. Only 90s kids really know this. Okay. Would you rather fly or be invisible?
Ooh, fly. Yeah. I think invisible is too much power.
Fair enough. If you could be someone else in your life for a day, who would you be?
Ronaldinho, when he was in Barca. That guy, he was different that time. He always with a smile. I imagine like very contagious in the dressing room. That guy.
Yeah, the smiling assassin is what he was called. One final question. Your biggest pet peeve?
When somebody is with not an ice cream, the ice cream that is with water, how you call it?
The ice candy.
No, that has a name. I forget the But okay, when people like it's eating like an ice cream, but it's not called an ice cream. It's when it's from water.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. We used to call it Ojo.
Yeah, and they eat it, like they bite it.
They bite it. Oh God.
Yeah. No, that's I'll tell you how you call it. The popsicle.
Right.
When people bite the popsicle. No, that's the worst, you know? You agree with me?
I do. I hate it too. I don't know how. My teeth get sensitive. So I completely understand. Anyway, it was an absolute pleasure, David, to have you on the podcast. You've shared some wonderful insights into this episode. So proud of knowing you as a friend and so happy to have met you at Loughborough. It's been an absolute pleasure. So to all the viewers who tuned in, thank you so much. Like, share, subscribe, you know the drill. David has contributed to this episode in ways that we never imagined as well. He's added some valuable insights. You can tune in next week for another new episode, and we'll be bringing more different content as well. And we'll keep it coming. Till then, take care, stay safe, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
If you like this episode, make sure to leave a like and share it with anyone else who might be interested. You can also subscribe on any social media platform that you prefer, and all our links are in the bio. We also have a website with all our episodes, as well as blogs and a whole lot of other sports content, so make sure to check that out as well.